It's time for Heatwave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heatwave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Welcome, Las Vegas. It is Heatwave Sports. I am Tom Barton with TomBartonSports.com, taking you through 2 hours of sports talk tonight. Tim Unglesby will be joining me shortly to jump on in this Game 7 type of atmosphere that we have. Look, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to be talking about the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, looking ahead in the playoffs. But Game 7, the best words that you can hear in sports, we hear that all the time. And both of the Game 7s in the NBA and the NHL, they were both built up today. They were both built up to be big-time battles. And what we watched were two completely and utterly different outcomes. We also have two more Game 7s tomorrow. Again, one in the NBA and one in the NHL to get into. The LeBron James saga. Is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Is he lying? Did he flop? What is going on with LeBron James? We'll get into that. We'll take a look at the Golden Knights and what they're going to do in the next round as far as the rest of the NHL, and a potpourri overall for tonight's feel, which is a playoff atmosphere feel to the show. Again, I'm Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. I'll be leading you off. We know Tim doesn't really do the NBA, so I'm going to lead it off with the NBA and give you my thoughts on what we watched today and have a little preview about tomorrow. Look, this was not the most exciting game, obviously, okay? Nuggets absolutely stomped the Clippers. The Clippers were one of the teams that we heard all for the last, week and a half, all playoff long, but they were the better team. And this started to kind of happen even before time. We started to see the seedings. And people said, forget about the seedings. The Clippers are better. And my contention to that, and it's not, you know, hindsight is 20/20. My contention to that is the best player on the planet is still in Denver. So you may think that the Clippers are the better team, but we've watched time and time again, especially in the recent NBA, but overall in the NBA, if you have your best player, if you have the best player on the floor, chances are you are going to win that game. And I don't think anybody is saying that Jokic won this game by himself, but he's the best player on the planet, okay? You look at the Clippers, so that was going into the series. You know, you look at the Clippers here, they had an opportunity. I mean, I don't think that the Clippers didn't have a chance here. It didn't feel like it because they got blown out. But guys, it's a Game 7. They took them to Game 7. They took them to Game 7, and in a lot of ways, they were the better team. But you can't go and look at this game and think anything but pure and utter domination. They had like, I'll break it down right now. I got to do my quick math here. They had 66 points going into the fourth. The offense was pathetic. It just, there's nothing that you could sugarcoat this with. You could talk about Kawhi, right? You could talk about Zubac holding down. And he did. Look, Zubac did a pretty good job against Jokic the whole series. Jokic went 16-10-8 today, and they won by 19 points and had just a massive lead going into the fourth. And this game, like I said, they had a chance. You're going to look at the final box score of this game, and don't read into just the final box score, because if you watch the game, look, the Clippers led in the first quarter. They had this game. They had the Nuggets on their heels. Jokic was frustrated, and then the Nuggets came out and put up a 37-point second quarter. It was almost like watching a UFC fight or a boxing match where the guy kind of got, you have to get him hit, right? You have to hit the guy to get him angry. And then all of a sudden the counter punch comes and it's over the top and it's dominating. But it was 58-47 going into the half. In that halftime locker room, you have to assume that the Clippers are going to come out on fire. Clippers are going to come out with everything they have. Their entire season is on the line. They just lost a five-point lead after really looking really crisp in the first quarter. They allowed the offense of the Nuggets, the defense of the Clippers, allowed the offense of the Nuggets to score 37 points. You have to expect that that locker room, guys, was a screaming, yelling, just clamped down on defense. You have got to be better on defense. You have to be better overall, but on defense. They had to emphasize defense. They had to emphasize slowing everything down. They had to. And they come out and they allow 35 in the third. This team, like I said, had 66 points going into the fourth quarter. The Denver Nuggets scored 72 points in the second and third by themselves. There was no sense of urgency. And what about the offense? I mean, the offense only put up 40 points in those two quarters. They put up 19 points. You come out of the locker room with your season on the line in a game seven, all or nothing. You come out of that locker room and you allow the other team to put up 35 and you put up 19. Absolutely squashed with their in-game adjustments. Squashed with their in-game motivation. So you're going to listen to other shows tonight into tomorrow over the course of the weekend. You're going to listen to people in LA spin this however you want to spin this. And you're going to look at them and you're going to read off the stats. And I can read the stats with Gordon with 22 and Braun with 21, Porter with 15 and Jokic with the 16 and Murray with 16. And it was even Westbrook had 16. And it was an attack where six guys scored into double digits. Yeah. Go out there. You can read the box score. You could go out there and tell me they needed to hit more three-pointers. 8 of 27 is all they went. You could go out there and tell me they got out-rebounded 54 to 45. They had more turnovers, only two, 14 to 12. You could tell me all of these stat type of analysis things, and I get it. It's a factor. It's a factor that Leonard went 6 of 13 from the field. It's a factor that their backups and their bench had to put up 25 points because a guy like James Harden put up 7 points in a do-or-die go-home game. 7 points. Look, he had 13 assists, okay? But 7 points. You can tell me all of these are factors. But we have to remember something, and I mention this a lot. These are still players. They're still human beings. This is not a video game, guys. This is not fantasy. Stats, numbers, trends, all of that works and it happens. What happened tonight was that this team went into the locker room and came out flat. And I don't know how it happened. Don't ask me how it happened. I don't know how it happened. The Denver Nuggets in a game seven in the playoffs came out flat in the third quarter. How do you come out flat? Unmotivated on both ends of the court. You know, it would be different if the Nuggets scored 35 and they scored 30 and it was just an up and down type of third. Okay. It would be different if the Clippers only scored 19 and they held the Nuggets to 22, 23. And you go, okay, it was a defensive, at least they locked down on defense. No, there's nothing good to take away from this third quarter. Nothing. And this is coming from somebody, guys, that I like Denver tonight, okay? If you listen to my podcast, Wagering, believe in betting, that's where I said it this week. I said, I'm taking the Nuggets. You can't not take the Nuggets at home. So this is not sour grapes or anything like that. I know when you hear me sometimes, I get a little emotional about games. I didn't lose this game. It was just amazing to me to see a team in a game seven to come out like this. Unmotivated, uninspired, terrible defense. And their offense not much better. Yeah, and people are going to point to James Harden because now he's lost a bunch of game sevens. He only put up 7 points. Yeah, you're going to point to him. I mean, Kawhi's got to be better than 6 of 13 from the field, right? You got to be better than that. I know he put up 22, 5, and 2. He's got to be better than that. He played a fine game. Is that what you want in a game 7? A fine game? You can take that from Jokic, who had a fine game. But they won by 19 points. Right? I mean, they won by 19. This is... The exit isn't shocking to me. I took the Nuggets. I think that if I told you guys the Nuggets before time, but the way that they came out of the locker room is stunning. It's just a stunning turn of events. How a team could come out like that in game 7. So the Nuggets are moving on. The Nuggets now in a position to take on the Thunder. Thunder is the best team in the league. Matty Visca, who was a friend of the show, turned around today and said, Thunder are going to crush the Nuggets. Look, I think that's the prevailing thought. I think Oklahoma City is the better team. I think Oklahoma City should win. Oklahoma City is a 10-point favorite on Monday night. I get it. That's what they should be. But the Nuggets are still a championship-level team with the best player on the planet on their team. I'm not writing this Nuggets team off. Look, I think you give me... Ask me to give me my prediction. I'll give you OKC in 6. But I think Denver wins a couple games. It wouldn't shock me. Look, if I'm sitting here next weekend, and I'm talking to you guys next weekend, and I go, oh, by the way, you know, Denver's pushing OKC, and Denver's winning or moving on. Or they're looking like they're going to move on. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not stunned there. But tomorrow, we have another Game 7. Another Game 7 in a spot where before the series began, all I heard were the Warriors were the better team. The Warriors had Curry. The conspiracy theorist said the NBA wants LeBron and Curry to move on to the next round. How'd that work out for LeBron? Everybody is sitting there talking about the Warriors. Meanwhile, the Rockets have the number 2 seed. The Rockets tomorrow are only a basket favorite over the Warriors at home. And I get it. If you haven't been paying attention, you love the Warriors. You're awe-inspired by Steph Curry and what he can do. There's history against the Rockets as well. Only 13 teams have ever overcome a 3-1 deficit to eventually win a playoff series in NBA history. 13 teams ever. The Rockets could become the 14th. The Rockets have momentum. The Rockets are a young team, right? I mean, they are. So every game that they play, they're getting that valuable playoff experience, which they have not had. They haven't had it. The longer this series goes on for the Rockets, or had gone on for the Rockets, the worse it is for the Warriors. That's just reality. Houston has to get their shooting going. Van Vliet has to be that guy. They can shock this Warriors team. Look, if the Warriors are down, this is not a team that's going to get rattled. I'll give credit where credit's due. Don't like their coach. Don't love a lot of their players. Hey, coach is one of the worst coaches in the NBA. Come on, guys, a joke. But don't like him. But he's not going to get rattled. This team's not going to get rattled. Steph and Jimmy Butler are not going to get rattled. But what they do is they look tired. They do look lethargic. So you have Houston with home court advantage. The Warriors as a 7 seed actually having pressure on them. Curry and Butler squarely pressure on them. The Warriors have pressure on them as a 7 seed. They're on the road. They're facing a young team that is getting experience, and that young team is going to be ready to go against an older team that up until this point has looked like they're playing in mud. They looked slow. They didn't look great. And look, now they're dealing with some injuries. Steph Curry's right thumb. Gary Payton's left thumb. Right? I mean, this is what we're talking about. You talk about from a betting angle, 62% of all games, before today, now it's 61 or something, 61% of all NBA game sevens go under the total. If you like it under, who are you liking here? The total set at 204. I think Van Vliet has to be the guy. I think if you have a high scoring game, you know, you're looking at the Rockets being that team. Because they have been stifled at times. They have been that team at times to sort of get themselves behind the eight ball. I think that most of the public is going to jump on the Warriors. And I can't talk you off of that. When you have Butler and Curry, it goes with my theory that I literally just was talking about, where if you have Butler and you have Curry, you have a position where you have the best player on the court. And they might have the best two players on the court, right? And I like Van Vliet, but they may have the best two players on the court. But something tells me that the Rockets are going to hang in there. It's a coin flip game for me. I'm not putting money on it. I didn't bet it. I didn't give it to TomBartonSports.com clients. I didn't do it. Something tells me the Rockets are going to play inspired. Something tells me that the Rockets are not going to pull a third quarter choke job like the Clippers played. Cavs Pacers series starts tomorrow. Look, I like the Pacers a lot. I think that they are a fun team, but to me, they're out of their depth here. Where I do believe anything can happen in a playoff series and all of that, look, the Cavs are at home. Cavs are a one seed for a reason. Cavs are the better team, and I think the Cavs generally roll in this series. Where I think the Nuggets have something, the big guy in the middle, but they also have that mentality. I think they could frustrate the Thunder. I don't think that's the case at all for the Cavs. Now, I'm not saying that the Cavs are going to all the way and, you know, smooth sailing for them. But in this series, I don't see the Pacers being up against them in any sort of capacity. Knicks Celtics also begin on Monday. And the Knicks were the better team against Detroit. Detroit, you know, I read somewhere in New York here on one of the blogs here in New York. They said, you know, Detroit was a little nuisance that we had to swat aside. Look, I mean, I give Detroit a little bit more credit than that, but not much more. I mean, were they really that much of a threat? I never thought the Knicks were in trouble. I never thought that the Knicks were not going to win that series. Now you got the big boys and you got the Celtics. I found the spread a little interesting, though. For the series, Celtics are only minus 700, getting back plus 500 with the Knicks. That should be bigger. If the Celtics are supposed to be, you know, game one, 8.5-point favorites, that should be about 9-1, 10-1. It's only 7-1. So there is either Knicks money coming in or they see a vulnerability in the Celtics that I don't see. I thought that the Celtics all year long were going to be in this position. They defeated the Magic. All right, they had a little trouble in one game where the Magic did what the Magic do, and that is, you know, play defense. But the Celtics, look at what they did. They did not allow more than 100 points in any playoff game, guys. Not in one playoff game. And as a matter of fact, if you go back the last time this team allowed more than 100 points, you have to go back to April 9th against, oh, by the way, these Knicks. So the Knicks can be that team. Look, they can get hot. Brunson is as good as you can get, especially clutch. You have to like what they do. You have to, you know, respect the Knicks and like what the Knicks are doing. But at the end of the day, are we really looking at a spot where the Knicks can push the Boston Celtics? I don't think they sweep. I think the Knicks win one or two, but the talent level is just a little bit different. I like Brunson. If the Knicks win this series, you're going to see a Karl Anthony Towns that New York rarely has seen. Brunson needs a true number two. And Towns is a good player. Hey, Towns is even a very good player. But he needs to be great. He needs to elevate where you're looking at this and you're saying, okay, Brunson's the one, but man, Towns is dominating the series. That's how this team wins. But I don't see it. I know I went favorite heavy, chalk heavy. I get it. I think OKC can struggle a little bit. Jokic, he's just that guy that I think he could take over the game. Exactly what I'm saying about Towns. But I do see a very chalky NBA. It's been chalky in the playoffs for a while in the NBA, for years. This is why my co-host, who's coming on pretty soon, Tim doesn't even watch it anymore. He gave it up years ago. And the funny thing is that Tim gave up watching the NBA a few years ago. It started getting bad. And what really sent him over the edge, I believe, was the garbage, nonsense, bubble championship COVID stuff. And I get it. Everybody was trying to make do of the ridiculous COVID hoax and all that. Okay, I get it. But to have them play with no travel and then hand LeBron a championship with the Lakers where everything was, come on, that's not a real championship. And that got under a lot of people's skin, so much so that Tim walked away from the sport. Now, I have been in a decline for a while in the sport. With the NBA, I've been in the decline a while. I am fully telling you now, I watch sports 365. And I am telling you now, I cannot consistently watch the NBA regular season. It's just not there for me. The NBA regular season, and look, the ratings will tell you, it's a dying sport. And LeBron killed it, by the way, but it's a dying sport. But the reality here is that it may be a dying sport for some, and it obviously for Tim, for me, it's a dying sport. But the playoffs can be exciting. The playoffs can get there. The playoffs are something to watch. The problem is if you have a sport that is dwindling and a sport that is going down the drain slowly and you give the public a boring playoff when the perception is that the sport is going down, all chalk, boring playoff, ho-hum, no real stars being pushed, it's gonna pull up the cord on the drain and it's going to go down the drain even further. So while I don't like LeBron, I understand that him being out of the playoffs hurts the NBA. I don't like Curry necessarily. Him being out of the playoffs hurts the NBA. I mean, we could be sitting there looking at a finals between Houston and Boston has Houston and Cleveland, and go ask a casual NBA fan, they probably can't name five players combined. That's not good for the sport, guys. It's just not. So we may be cheering that LeFake is down and out and LeBron is out of the playoffs. We may be cheering tomorrow that if you're an anti-Curry guy, that Curry's out of the playoffs. But it hurts the product. It's going to hurt the product. And what hurts the product even more are one seeds moving on. One seeds going down. Oh, here we go, going all the way, wire to wire. Maybe you catch a game here or there. The Knicks catch a game. Oh, they beat Boston for a game. Tell you what, you want ratings? The Knicks going to the championship and the Knicks pulling a weird shocker. That would be a headline. That would get people's eyes on it. New York is a baseball town, but it's dying to be a basketball town. Just never happened. Really not in my lifetime. You know, you had good teams for a while, but that was it. Boston winning again, what is that going to do for anybody? Cleveland, Houston, OKC, they're good teams. Denver doing it again. Good teams. Very good teams. The only two teams that'll move the needle, though, as far as getting non-basketball fans or fringe basketball fans to pay attention, the only two teams are the Warriors with Curry. Curry takes a number 7 team to this championship, with Butler, by the way. Curry and Butler take the number 7 team to the championship. That's going to get people talking. That's a headliner. The Knicks going to the championship, that's a headliner. Outside of that, sports going downhill. And the playoffs are supposed to be exciting. We have not had a great first round. And we got a game 7 today. And I was pumped up for a game 7. A game 7 could save it. And it was one of the worst game 7s that you'll see. We got another game 7 on tap tomorrow. Does Curry hit that last shot? Is that what we're going to start to remember? Is that going to get us the juices flowing and get us talking and opening up the show tomorrow? We have to. With Steph Curry, is that what we're going to have to do? Or do we get another ho-hum, boring, yawn fest? I certainly hope not. All right, let's take a quick time out. When we come back, we're going to get a little into the NHL. I want to touch on LeBron as well. We had a Game 7 in the NHL today. We have a Game 7 in the NHL tomorrow. And you want to talk about the anti-NBA. What an awesome game between the Stars and the Cavs tonight. We will get into all that and more right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heat Wave Sports with Tom Martin.
All right, guys, welcome back to Heat Wave Sports. We're talking all of the playoff action, and we talked about the NBA, but I want to get a little bit into the LeBron stuff, and it'll be short. We'll take another quick timeout, and then Tim could join us after I get done with the NBA. But I have to talk about LeBron. The exit, the retirement, the injury, all of it. This is typical LeBron, isn't it? Even in his exit, somehow it's about him. Even in a first round failure, somehow it's about LeBron. I have been on the air calling LeBron the most unintelligent athlete I've seen in a long time. And that's from his on-the-court acumen to the things that I see him doing on and off the court. And this is further proof of that. Look, his political stance is ridiculous in itself, but that's not what I'm getting into. LeBron James had an opportunity in his career, and this is why I call him unintelligent. LeBron James had an opportunity in his career to take that mantle and take that legacy and run with it. And instead of pushing it aside and letting others do the talking for you, let me find my place in history. I don't care where my place is. I just want to win rings. I don't care where my place is. I just got to go out there, be the my best. Oh, Jordan's the best. Oh, Jordan's definitely the best, right? I mean, yeah, I'm chasing him. I'm chasing greatness. Be humble. Go out there. Go after that. LeBron allowed, and don't think that he didn't do this because he's got probably the most powerful publicity team out there. LeBron allowed for years the conversation to go on that he was the best. And he's the greatest. And he is Jordan. You know, and I said this about Aaron Rodgers for years. Years and years. And it lives, my words live on paper forever. Our buddy Rob Mish wrote in his book about how I feel about Aaron Rodgers. And I feel vindicated now about Rodgers. And my contention with Rodgers was always, why can't Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers camp, Aaron Rodgers publicity, and all the Aaron Rodgers fans out there, why can't he just be good? Why do you have to attempt to go up against Brady? Because you look ridiculous doing that. And instead of looking at him and saying, hey, he's just a really good player, we compare him to somebody else, and he fails miserably. It's an unfair comparison. And LeBron James, wearing the 23, doing the antics that he does, all of that, he let it get away from him. And now every conversation, everything LeBron does, everything, is no longer about the greatness of LeBron, the longevity of LeBron, how LeBron is doing things at this age. None of it is about any of that. It's about how he's not Jordan. And the smart ones, we all knew it. We didn't have to have that conversation. Forget about not Jordan. He's not Bird. He's not Magic. He may not be Curry. I mean, who had a more dominant career right now when you're talking about wins and everything? Curry changed the game. There is a good argument to be had, and I'm not having that argument tonight. You guys could save your outrage. You could write me if you want, at Tom Barton Sports, but I'm not going to get into the Curry against LeBron debate. That's not what I'm getting into now, but it's a conversation to have. So we went from LeBron James most of his career being favorably compared to Michael Jordan, and you have LeBron lovers out there still comparing him to Michael Jordan, where he falls flat on his face time after time, literally and figuratively. Flopping LeBron is as much of a thing to make fun of as the accomplishments of LeBron. LeBron running out of the game with a hangnail. barely getting touched and laying on the court. When he was laying on the court the other night, when he barely was touched and he clearly flopped, even his own teammates didn't come over and look at him. Because they're like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. And the LeBron nonsense just has to stop. Look, it should have stopped a long time ago. But now we're talking about, was he hurt? Well, LeBron was perfectly okay on the court. But afterwards, oh, he needs to be helped out of the locker room. LeBron was fine until he exited. So you need a reason for him to exit. And now the conversation is, will he retire? What's going to happen with that? So he wants everybody hanging in the balance of the retirement. He's unintelligent, one of the most unintelligent athletes I've ever covered, because LeBron James allows this stuff to happen. He allows it to be about him when it shouldn't be about him at all. So with the good comes the good, with the bad comes the bad. LeBron James has become a punchline, guys. Michael Jordan's never a punchline. Larry Bird was never a punchline. Wilt, never a punchline. Right? I could go down their list. Bill Russell, never a punchline. LeBron's a punchline. Heck, Steph Curry's not a punchline. I'll go back to the Curry thing. So now LeBron gets one of the better players in the league on his team to make sure that he could go out there and at least not embarrass himself, and he embarrassed himself. That's what this... LeBron James embarrassed himself. LeBron James has been eliminated in 5 games or less 3 times in his last 3 playoff series. What are we doing here? Are you kidding? I look at LeBron James as shooting himself in the foot. He is the meme. LeBron James is the meme of a guy riding the bicycle, sticking a twig or a stick inside his spoke, falling off the bicycle, and blaming somebody else for it. How could this happen? That's LeBron. In his last 14 playoff games, LeBron James is 2-12. 2-12. Are we kidding? LeBron James has been owned multiple times in his career. Owned. Jokic owned him. Dirk owned him. Now he's got Luka and he's still getting owned. I mean, what are we doing here? So for any of the LeBron lovers that are still hanging on to this LeBron or Jordan debate, end it. You sound ridiculous. You sound like the people that are still talking Rodgers or Brady, which are few and far between. And I don't think anybody's really taking that serious, but that was a thing for a while. That was a thing for a while. You know, I look at the landscape of the NBA, and like I said, LeBron not being in the next round hurts the NBA. It does. Whether you like him or you don't, and I don't, but you like him or you don't, that's fine. It hurts the NBA, him not being here, but it hurts the NBA more that we're talking about LeBron, that LeBron is the story. Is LeBron going to retire? Is LeBron playing with his son? Is LeBron going to put together the roster? Is LeBron really hurt? Why do we care he's gone? What other sport do you watch somebody fail miserably in the playoffs? And somehow or another, all the attention still on them? LeBron James overshadows both of these game sevens, guys. Make no mistake about it. LeBron James is overshadowing the NBA playoffs. An NBA playoffs that still has Steph Curry alive in this NBA playoffs. LeBron James is overshadowing. Like I said, he's a polarizing figure. But once again, every time he has an opportunity to do the right thing, every time he has an opportunity to reset and say, okay, this isn't what LeBron is all about, he does exactly what LeBron is all about. I don't know why we can expect anything different. This is who LeBron James is. He is one of the least clutch players that you'll see. He has now been a playoff failure for the better part of his Laker career. And don't give me that bubble championship absolute nonsense. You did not win a championship with the Lakers, LeBron. The bubble championship does not count. You've been an utter failure in the Lakers uniform. And for you Laker fans out there, where are you? Where are the Laker fans out there? Get some guts, man. LeBron fans calling him the best Laker ever. Are you kidding me? He's not in the top five. Stop. But you should be outraged. Laker fans should be up in arms that he tanked your organization. He tanked your franchise. This was LeBron's creation. And he's been an utter failure. Failure. Do not spin this any other way. You can't spin this any other way. I don't take anyone serious that talks about a bubble championship. First of all, 0-0-0. Do not even have that conversation. So what has LeBron James done after that? And now you have LeBron and Luka, and you can't get out of the first round? I don't know even where to go with the LeBron conversation other than, look, he's old. It's time to step away. You've had a good career. You'll be remembered as one of the top 20 greatest basketball players of all time. And that's that. Close the book on it. You chasing the title to be the best ended a long time ago. You chasing the title to be an elite Laker ended a long time ago. All of that is behind you. There's no catching up, no matter how long you drag your body up and down the court and flop all over the place like a dead fish. Actually, a dead fish wouldn't flop, right? And almost a dying fish would flop. That's what you are, LeBron. So I don't really care if he retires or not. Won't affect my life one way or the other. But I think it hurts the NBA. I think it hurts his legacy every day that he makes it more about himself. It's not his play on the court that is necessarily embarrassing. It's the other. He's not an embarrassing player. He's an embarrassing man. That's LeBron James. That's the legacy, the punchline, the meme. That's who he is. There's no memes. I know they didn't have them back then. But there's no punchlines about the greats. Greats don't have punchlines. LeBron James is becoming a punchline. And where are the Laker fans demanding that LeBron gets hands off of this? All right, guys. That's going to do it for the NBA. I'm going to take a quick timeout. Come on back. We will dive into a little hockey. Game 7 today was absolutely fantastic. Game 7 tomorrow we'll preview a couple of the series that are going on. I think this is one of the best stacked fields as far as who can win. I talked about this on the show in the NHL before the playoffs began. Let's take a quick timeout. Come on back. We'll be back right after this on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
All right, guys, welcome back to Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com here. We were talking a little NBA. We're going to shift gears for hour number two and get into the NHL. Tim Unglesby will be here for hour number two. I have to tell you guys, look, the differences between the NBA and NHL playoffs, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, it really is. How can one league do everything so well and the other league just do it so poorly? I mean, I really do believe that when you look at even the fans of each understanding, you go into a Stanley Cup playoff with the idea that anything can happen. You know, and I've said this before. Every sport wants parity. The NFL screams and yells parody, and then Tom Brady goes out there and he's in the Super Bowl every year. And then they go, well, it was just Tom Brady. You know, that's all it was, Tom Brady. That's okay. And then it's Patrick Mahomes who's there every year. And the same teams are generally there. Major League Baseball has a large deal of parity when it comes to championships, but overall, not many of the top teams change. You rarely get a lot the parity that you want. College football, there's zero parity at all. I can tell you right now that Alabama and Georgia are going to be good next year. You know, Ohio State's going to be in the mix, Michigan. I mean, we know. There's no parity. The NBA used to be a league where there was some upsets. There was some parity, but generally speaking, no, there's none there. And then you get into the field of 64 or 68, which it is now, and the NCAA. And all they scream and yell is anyone can win. Anyone. And I've talked about this on the show many times. A 16 seed. Oh, they got a chance. They're in the dance. They got a fighting opportunity. Right? UMBC beat Virginia. They got a chance. St. Pete's. Oh, here we go. Butler. They got a chance, man. All of these teams have a chance. No, they don't. It's a giant illusion. The NCAA tournament, the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, and the NBA is an illusion that anyone can win. It's not happening. We have never watched in the NFL, you know, a just absolute back into the playoffs kind of team go on and win it all. We've never seen that happen. Generally speaking, we look around and we go, okay, we sort of know. You might have one team here or there that come out of nowhere, but generally, NCAA basketball never had more than an 8 seed one. College football, forget that. I mean, just eliminate that. If you're not preseason ranked 10, you're not even in the conversation anymore. Right? And that was with the BCS or this, everything. If you're not already ranked in the top 10, you're probably out. That's just the way it goes. NBA, you might have a team here or there that upsets teams, but is it really an upset? Again, tomorrow we have a 2 seed against a 7 seed, and they're only favored by a basket on the road, right? So are we kidding? But the NHL playoffs is quite different. The NHL playoffs is the animal that all of these want to be. Anyone can win any series. The Colorado Avalanche had the best odds to win the Stanley Cup before the playoffs began. The best odds, guys. They're gone in the first round. They're gone. You see that happen often. There's like the President's Trophy curse out there. And in the NHL, things move fast. The Rangers were in the Stanley Cup playoffs last year. They were in the finals last year. They fired their coach. This year, 1 year later. So things move really fast on the ice. Things move really fast off the ice. In the NHL, the playoff scenarios, the playoff picture, everything that the NHL does right in the playoffs is something that every other league wishes they did right. And when you start to peel back the layers, you see it. You see it crystal clear that anybody that watches this goes, I don't feel comfortable. You're a 1 seed? I don't feel comfortable. You won the President's Trophy. I don't feel comfortable. The Avs didn't feel comfortable. And I know the Stars are really good. But the Avs didn't feel comfortable. The Avs were up 2-0 today at home in the third. You think those Avs fans felt comfortable? Well, if you did, how you feeling now? You don't feel comfortable in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's something that really, truly, every league wishes they had. And it's something that I think as a collective overall sports society, we just don't realize. We don't recognize enough how crazy the NHL playoffs can be. How absolutely wild. I mean, how many times do you see, you know, a team beat another team in the NHL playoffs that is overseeded, and you go, Well, yeah, hey, yeah, that's not really shocking. No, not one of these series. And look, I gave you guys, I gave Tom Barton Sports members as a level four play that the Vegas Golden Knights were going to win. I gave Carolina Hurricanes that were going to win. They were big favorites, right? Not massive. They weren't, you know, 10 to 1 or anything. They weren't 5 to 1. Okay? They were big favorites. But both of them, I felt good about. That doesn't mean I feel good in the next round. And if they would have lost, look, if the Wild would have upset Vegas and they pushed them hard, I don't think anybody would have been stunned. No one's falling out of their seat for something like that. So I think we should take a step back when you... When I sit back and I talk 45 minutes of the NBA playoffs and I realize how lopsided it is, and I talk 45 minutes about the NBA playoffs and I realize how front-loaded it is, and 45 minutes about the NBA playoffs and I talk about how the Game 7 was just boring and most of these series were boring and most of the what we're going to see moving forward will be boring. None of that you could say about the NHL. But we're going to say a lot about the NHL in hour number two. We'll be back right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Hour number two, Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton and Tim Oglesby taking you. Hour number two, we're going to talk a little NHL playoffs, get into some Major League Baseball as well. A couple thoughts on the NFL. Tomorrow night, we will be on again at 10 p.m. A lot of baseball talk tomorrow night. We are 1 month into the season. Some of the things that we're seeing are absolutely insane, guys. Absolutely insane. I know that Tim is going to want to jump on it. We are watching the greatest player that most of us have ever laid eyes on in Aaron Judge. We are watching just historic type of just ridiculous things happening in Major League Baseball. And what about some struggles? You know, some of these superstars like Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, not exactly lighting it up. I know there's plenty of time, but we'll get into some of that tomorrow night as well. But I do want to get into the NHL tonight. And for that, there's no more NBA, so it's okay. There's no more NBA, Tim. Welcome to the show.
I had to boycott hour number one, Tom. You know how the NBA is with me.
But Tim, let me just quickly ask, because it's not something that is about the playoffs now. You know, is it unfair that I label LeBron James what I label LeBron James? Because he's allowed the conversation with his publicity and everything else, he's allowed it to become LeBron against Jordan for the better part of a decade, where it should have never been there, right? I mean, if you are LeBron James, don't you kind of have to put an end to that rather than make yourself look silly?
Absolutely. But look, and for full disclosure to anybody listening that doesn't know, I stopped watching Tom, we're going on 3 years now because just the caliber of the game is not the same.
Did you stop watching during COVID because of the bubble?
That was what finally sent me over the edge. Yes, but I tried to after the bubble. I tried to get back into it the next season, but it's just gone away from me. And we're talking about, right, Tom, that your and I's favorite team are the Celtics, and they just won an NBA title. So it didn't matter to me, and I don't think I'll ever get that back. And you know what's funny is I'll go to a family function, right? Because I won't. If it's on, I'm not watching it at my house. I purposely avoid it, right? But if I go to a family function somewhere and they happen to be watching it, I'll just glance at it. I'll watch a few plays, and then it reminds me in my head, this is why I don't watch it anymore. It's horrible to watch, absolutely horrible. And everybody wants to say, oh, Tim, the playoffs are different. No, they're not a different thing. The scores, the games are exciting, right? You could say even the Game 7 atmosphere of it, I get it. It's still, the play is garbage.
Tim, you missed 66 points in three quarters today.
Yeah.
A playoff game that was like a 40-point game going into the fourth.
As far as LeBron goes, right, Tom? Because I do keep up with the headlines. I do read the stories. He makes himself more of a fool every season, it seems like. And I don't know how you know, I know Chris Wynn will bite back a little bit on this in our group chat, but when you talk about legacies of the greatest NBA players of all time, I know you and I don't feel that he deserves to even be up on a list because he's a stat compiler. We've already broken that down year after year. He's a stat compiler, and that's all he's doing at this point is stat compiling more and showing nepotism where it doesn't need to be shown, right? That, I mean, that's what we've broken it down to, and his political outlook on life is just completely moronic. Those are the three things I get from LeBron James now.
Yeah, completely. Completely agree. All right, so let's turn the page on the NBA. We had a subpar, almost terrible NBA game today, Game 7, when you get excited about a Game 7. But we had an awesome Game 7 in the NHL. The Stars and the Avs, look, I didn't touch this game. On my podcast, I told everybody I'm taking the Stars plus the 1.5, and I got it at plus 200. I didn't want to lay, I mean, minus 200. I didn't want to really lay that much. I had a couple of bucks on it, not much. Not because I thought the Stars would win. I just thought it would be a back-and-forth battle. I thought it was a really good matchup. But I thought that the Avs were going to come out on top. When they jumped out to that 2-0 lead, who loses a 2-0 lead at home? I mean, that was it. It was over. I can't believe what I watched in the third. And not only a single player, but just overall, Dallas just looked great.
Isn't a 2-0 lead in hockey the worst lead to have, Tom? Isn't that what they say? A 2-0 lead in hockey?
Yeah, I guess if you're from Colorado, it is. Yeah.
And what's worse than this is that, look, they're both very good teams, right? But what's worse in this for me, if I was an Avs fan, is that the guy that beat you by himself in the third period is the guy you traded to the team earlier in the season. A guy that helped you win a Stanley Cup a few years back. You traded him to Dallas, and he ended up beating you in the Game 7. That itself, Tom, is storybook, if anything.
If you don't know his name, Jim Nill is the guy that you want to say thank you to. So that's the Stars general manager who pulled off that trade. And yeah, I mean, look, got a hat trick in the third. He does it. Afterwards, he said, you know, he was emotional. Those are my brothers. He still feels a connection to the Avs, and he sends them home, right? I mean, and now he sends them home, and he never wanted to leave. That's the problem. This is where it gets dangerous now for Colorado, because not only did you lose, which hurts enough, but you lost to the team of the guy that you traded, and you lost because he did it. And he made it very clear he did not want to go. He didn't want to leave. He told everybody he didn't want to leave. He still says it to this day. Those are my brothers. That has got to hurt if you're an Avs fan. I mean, there's no getting past this. You're an Avs fan. This is going to be a really interesting offseason because you go home in the first round. You were expected to win. The guy you traded away. I am right now really nervous if I'm an Avs fan about what is this direction of this team.
What was the onus of the trade? It was a salary situation, right, Tom? Basically, knowing that that window has closed for Colorado, the window that they won a Stanley Cup in, and then unfortunately they had some terrible injuries. We know that, and it's shut. So what do? You try to salvage what you can out of it before you get nothing when these guys leave on their own. It just ended up biting them in the ass this time. That's the only thing you can say, but. Colorado. Right,
and I want to make this really clear, though. He wasn't traded directly from the Avs to the Stars, just so everybody knows. He went to the Hurricanes first, and then the Stars traded and gave him like a $100 million contract. So
yeah.
Just so we know, it wasn't a direct trade. That would have hurt even more. But I don't want him to think that I'm saying they traded him directly to him. He just wound up there.
But how does Carolina end up trading him, though? Why would Carolina trade him?
He needed the $100 million. Right. You knew he wanted the long-term deal, $100 million. And look at Carolina. Look, I'm not saying that he's not a great player. Carolina has a chance to win Stanley Cup this year without him.
Yeah.
So they don't need to spend the $100 million on him.
Did you go over the Game 7 tomorrow, which the winner will play Dallas?
I haven't touched on the NHL at all. Yeah. We have Connor Hellebuck, who, Tim, at this point, the people that are calling him a playoff choker are right. I mean, right? He's allowed three or more goals each of the past four games. He's got a 1-3 record. He's allowing nearly six goals per game. He's 5-11 in the postseason over the past 3 years. He has an .858 save percentage. I mean, the naysayers, I wanted to tell you, you're crazy, and you know I make a lot of money on the Jets over the course of the season. I wanted to tell all the naysayers, Lee, get off his back. I like this kid. He's, you know, he's good. He's not a playoff choker. All he's doing is proving that that's what he is. I mean, and that's, to me, that's it tomorrow. You could talk about the Jets defense. You could talk about Bennington, who has been fantastic. He's 11-4-1 over the last 16 starts. He looks great. You know he stepped up huge in the 2019 Stanley Cup run. You know that. This is goalie against goalie. This is a goalie that might be the best in the league during the regular season, and Hellebuck, who just is a playoff choker, against Binghamton, who might get overlooked during the regular season and has just been absolutely fantastic come playoff time.
Hellebuck, a Vezina winner last year, right, Tom? He's won it twice. He was the
Might win it again this year.
Yeah, he's a favorite to win it. The starting goalie for Team USA at the Nations. He's supposed to be the starting goalie in the Olympics next year. And off to look, the first two games he was fine, and then just you know how it is with the goalies. It's a mental thing, and the only thing I could say on a positive is that he hasn't lost at home yet in this series, where that game is tomorrow. He did give up 3 goals 2 games ago, but they ended up winning 5-3. I don't know where he's at mentally. We've seen it happen to goalies, right, Tom? That just the deterioration as the series goes on. He might, you know, what happens tomorrow? First period, they come out and they score on the first shift or second shift. It's meltdown city at that point.
Yeah, we've seen this in other sports where, you know, guys meltdown. Like you said, it could go really bad. But we've also seen it the other way. All you need is that one, right? That's all you need to shed the criteria. John Elway was a playoff choker, right? Super Bowl choker. Couldn't win the Super Bowl. He was terrible until he won. And here you go. Peyton Manning couldn't win the big one. Barry Bonds was one of the worst playoff performers you'll ever see. Couldn't do anything in the playoffs. He took roids and cheated. But you know, you could shed that label. If you look at the negative and you say, you know, Hellebuck goes out there, gives up 1 or 2 quick goals. They're down 2-0 or 2-1 going into the second, and he could melt down. What if he goes out there and shuts them down? And we're talking about tomorrow night, Hellebuck winning a 1-0 game or 2-0 game has the game of his life. Then all of a sudden, you look at the Jets and you go, oh, he just shed that, and he might go on, and they might be raising the cup because of him. I think he could go either way. My problem is every single thing that we have seen from him in the playoffs and him this year, every single thing tells us that it is in his head. He is a choker right now.
Tom, these guys get paid millions of dollars to perform in high-pressure situations. The problem here is that if you're Winnipeg, look, there's no rest, right? He got pulled again. Third time on the road against St. Louis, he's gotten pulled. And he has a day off to think about it, or he has to try to stay off social media, or he has to try to stay off the internet to not read these things and get more into his own head. I'm going to go with your theory, though. I think this guy's solid. And that's, like you said, that's all he is. I believe we saw Vasilevsky encounter something like this a few years ago, and they ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So, you know, experience says this guy is the man. He's just got to do it. You know what would help if they go out tomorrow and they get a couple quick ones for him? That would definitely take the pressure off. But look, that's why they play, right, Tom? It's gonna be an intense game tomorrow. It's gonna be tight, and that's the thing. If he can keep the soft goals out, I think they pull through at home.
His numbers are just ugly. I mean, you look at the regular season, over 63 games, he had 2 goals against average, .925 save percentage. I mean, it's not that he's good, guys. He's the best goalie in the NHL, and he's been the worst goalie in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, the pendulum is so ridiculous when you're talking about how bad he has been and how good he was during the regular season. This is not somebody that, okay, you know what? You know, he was good. No. The best, and now the worst. It is, you want to talk about the yips, right, Tim? We all know the yips in sports. Yeah, Connor's got the yips, man.
Yeah. St. Louis has nothing to lose tomorrow, Tom. They just go out balls to the wall. 20-point differential between these two teams in the regular season. Down 2-0, right, to begin this series. And all they've done is just win on their home ice, which is all you can do in a 7-game series. You got to win to advance. So they kept home ice. Now they got to break one. They got to steal one on the road. The line, though, tells me how I'm thinking, though, Tom. Jets minus 160. I'm not betting it, but that's the way I'd lean.
Yeah, I'm leaning it too. I think that this is a team effort where the defense says to themselves, we're going to help our guy. Our guy Connor has helped us put our team on his shoulders. He's helped us. We got to go out there, like you said, put a quick goal in, one or two, dive in front, make those stops. This is what we need to do. And I think that the defense really gets them on this. I would go, look, like you said, I'm not laying 160. I would go with Winnipeg if you gave me a coin flip. Outside of a coin flip, I'm not going near this game. By the way, the over-under is set at 5.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like the Blues, just take the over. Because if you think Hellebuck is going to stink, he's going to give up 3 or 4. That's when they're going to pull him. You know what I mean? 5 is the number.
Let's take a look at the other series starting up Monday, Tommy. In the East, Florida will travel to Toronto for game 1 of the second round, Eastern Conference. Is this, we say it every year, but I'm going to ask it again. I know you talked about it last week. How about Toronto? 52 wins, right? They dust off Ottawa 4-2 in the first round. Is this the year? Is this the year, Tom, we get a Canadian team possibly sneaking into a Stanley Cup final?
No.
No.
No. Listen, and that's not me being against the 51st state there. It's just the reality is that I have been burned. I thought Toronto had a chance a couple of years ago, really jumped on them. I thought that Edmonton had a shot last year. I put money on them. I really had maybe I'm just hurting inside because of my couple losses, but I think the Panthers are the better team. So I don't even know if they get past the Panthers. I think that you go back and you look at the Knights and Oilers, it's a coin flip. I think the Oilers should win, if I could say that, but I keep saying, you know what? I can't bet against the Knights. And then the Oilers would then have to go up against one of these. I mean, I just don't see it. You only have a couple of avenues for that, especially if Winnipeg loses tomorrow, right? But you only have a couple of avenues, and I don't see the path. Toronto's not that team, and I just don't think Edmonton's that team, Tim.
Yeah. I don't know if Toronto gets out of this series, Tom.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
Florida's, with the records aside, I mean, there's a few point differential here, but I'm just saying, what do we look for in Stanley Cup playoffs, right, Tom? It's goaltending and defense. I love Bobrovsky. And, you know, we're talking, he's on a multi-year run here of being excellent in the playoffs, winning a Stanley Cup, right? So I don't look at necessarily the 10-point differential for the season or the home ice here. I think, in my mind, Florida's the better team. If this is just an all-out offensive explosion, though, Toronto will win the series. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you talk about Toronto, you talk about Marner and Matthews, right? That's it. 1-2. Boom, boom. That's not defense. And you talk about Florida, what's the first name that comes to mind? Their goalie. So, you know, and that doesn't mean that Florida can't score, by the way. I think that Florida is the most complete team. Now, it is hard to go back-to-back. It is hard to do what Florida does constantly, you know, right there, and they've done it for a while. But they are the most complete team in the NHL. I think they have the best roster in the NHL.
They took – when you look at the Eastern Conference, it was almost, for me, a pseudo-changing of the guard when the Panthers now have knocked out the Lightning 2 years in a row, right? I think the Lightning were the cream of the crop, right, Tom? John Cooper, Vasilevsky, they did their thing, a couple cups out of it. And it's almost like Florida now has taken over that mantle. They won a cup. They've taken out their foe. They're the hot team. So regular season is regular season. The postseason is completely different. I'm with you. The better goalie, better defense, I like Florida to win this probably in five or six, Tom. Probably I'd like to say five, but I could see six.
Yeah, I could see six. I could see Marner getting real hot one game or Matthews. You know, I could see that. It is kind of amazing that we're talking about. There's not a state that at all can even hold a candle to Florida hockey.
Right.
Zero.
Right.
They just can't. Yeah, I mean, Florida hockey has run dominance now for the better part of a decade in the NHL. That is a crazy statement to say, but it really is. I mean, they are good fans, loyal fans, which is, again, something crazy to say because Florida has terrible baseball fans, not the best football fans, but and horrible basketball fans. But as far as hockey goes, great fans, great organizations, well-run, good coaching, great goaltending. They are Florida has taken over as the central location of all things hockey. What a weird statement that is.
The other East matchup, round two, will be Carolina taking on Washington. Capitals have home ice. What are your thoughts on this series, Tom?
Look, I think I know Washington is dangerous. I know they're your team, Tim, but I said it before the playoffs began. I've been saying it for a couple of years. I think Carolina is on their way to a championship. I mean, they just look that much faster than everyone out there. And I'm not a guy that looks at speed statistics, which I know a lot of guys do, but the speed statistics are my eye test. Carolina's just fast. They're insanely fast. And I worry about a Washington team that, while as dangerous as they are, they played a long season, Tim. It's been an emotional season with a little added pressure following them around, a little extra, an older team, extra pressure, long season. I like the fast team to get out in front. I think Carolina wins in seven. I think it's a seven-game series. I think it's a classic. But I see vulnerability in Washington that I just don't see in a quick Carolina team that I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up with.
You've been on Carolina most of the season, actually. You have on the air and personally have told me you like the way that they play hockey, basically. And they did that in round one as well. They dusted the New Jersey off like it was nothing. Yeah, being a Caps fan, look, they overachieved in my mind. I didn't think they'd be this good. I didn't think they'd be as bad as people said. In fact, on the other station, there's a sound clip they play where the guy's just completely tearing on him after they beat the Knights earlier in the year here in Vegas. The guy's just completely tearing on him, and they went on nothing but short of a miraculous run. And yes, there's a lot of elements into the season, right? What's the emotional status of did that goal chase, what did it do for him? And I think, Tom, that as draining as that was, it never really, I don't think it became a distraction so much because he was able to just go out and finish it. They already knew they were in the playoffs at that point. And in round one, I kind of got worried for a second, right, Tommy, I believe we were both watching at the same time when they let Montreal come from behind and tie this game up in the third period with in a blink of an eye, the game was tied, and they ended up winning that game in overtime. But they did what they had to do. Logan Thompson, who I loved here, like probably the only Vegas Golden Knight I've ever liked was Logan Thompson, right? He's been nothing short of spectacular for the team this year. He got a contract out of it. Hopefully that's the goalie of the future for the Caps. This is going to be a tough one. You're right, Tom. I'm going to pull the homer card, though. I like my boys. I just think I can't say season of destiny, Tom, because the destiny has already been achieved, and that was the goal chase. I don't think most people will say that a Stanley Cup was the goal this year. Even though it's a goal for everybody, I don't think that was in people's minds that they were going to be as good as they are. And at this point now, I still think they're being overlooked when you talk about the teams left in the playoffs. I'm hoping they can use that to an advantage.
Yeah, look, I think it's a coin flip contest. I'm not taking Carolina. I just worry about how the longer it goes for Washington, the more pressure games. And I didn't like what I watched last series. Like you said, the longer I think that, you know, this older team might be wearing down. I just think it's a bad matchup. I actually think, and I like Florida a lot, I actually think that they match up better against Florida, weirdly. But I don't see it in Washington. pull the homer card. I'm actually rooting for you because I don't have a dollar on Carolina, so that's okay. I just I look at it and I'm nervous.
The two West playoff series, you brought it up. You talked about it already. Vegas and the Oilers. Edmonton, the first series, right, Tom? They completely flipped the switch in the middle of that series and just took the Kings out when they looked just terrible to start that series. Absolutely terrible. You're not going to be able to do that with Vegas, though. So they need to, I don't know, you know, defensively, I like Vegas. Goaltending, I like Vegas. If it's a shootout, I like Edmonton, but I don't know, Tom. I just don't see it for the Oilers. I'm going to have to say, unfortunately, I like the Vegas Golden Knights to advance.
Well, that's nice to say, unfortunately, on these airwaves. Yeah. You know, look, me and Chris talked about it a little bit, and, you know, with Vegas and what I thought that they could do this year over the course of the playoffs, and I think they have a vulnerability that, like Washington, was barely touched last time, and it will come back and hurt them. And you know, I put a level 4 play, one of my biggest plays, that they were going to beat the Wild. And they did, but I didn't like how they got there. I mean, a win is a win, and you move on. And I cashed my ticket just the same. It doesn't matter. But I didn't like what I watched. I didn't like the focus of this Vegas team at all. So can Edmonton win? Yeah, absolutely. I think they certainly can. But when you're in a coin flip spot, and I do think that this is -110 across the board, you have a tendency in other sports to go with the best player. Best player, best two players are clearly on Edmonton. But in hockey, like a lot of other sports, you like the defense. I think the Knights have absolutely the better defense. The one number and the one statistic, I should say, that jumps out at me, and this is where I think the difference is. Edmonton's power play is just dynamic. It's scary. It's downright scary, right? The Vegas Golden Knights have the least penalty minutes in the league. So they're not going to hurt themselves. And I think that when you are a penalty-driven team and a power play-driven team like Edmonton, you're relying upon that power play to get you your points. But if Vegas isn't making mistakes, they're not going to get you on the power play. And I think when all is said and done, if the Edmonton Oilers win this series, it's going to be because Vegas plays non-Vegas type hockey where they get themselves in trouble and put them in a power play situation. And if Edmonton loses, it's going to be because Vegas just didn't give them enough opportunities.
They played four times in the regular season. They split them, right, Tom? That's the thing. It's going to come down to, again, goaltending, but who makes the big plays when it counts? Because the games were all close this year. Even the 6-4 shootout or 6-3, they were close at one point, and whatever team made a switch in the game, is it Stone? Is it Eichel? Is it Draisaitl or is it McDavid? And that's what it's always going to come down to in this series, I think. I'm not saying it's going to be a whitewash. I think Vegas holds a slight advantage, but it would not surprise me if Edmonton outshoots and outscores Vegas and somehow wins this series. But I think we're going to get what we're going to get. This might be, Tom, this might be the best one of the second round.
I think it absolutely is. Yeah, it's one of those series that you just sit back to me like, okay, I'm looking for something to bet on, or I'm looking for something. No. I'm just going to sit back and just enjoy this one. You know, well, put everything away. I'm not going to have a dollar on it. I'm just going to kind of enjoy.
So the other matchup we're waiting on tomorrow, pending the Winnipeg St. Louis winner in game 7. They'll play Dallas, Tommy. Real quick on not to backtrack, but look, Winnipeg is the president's champ, right? The number one team in the league scoring points wise. How big of an upset? I don't think anybody's talking about this as much because maybe it's a Canadian team, but how big is this a 1-8 upset if they lose it?
I think it's massive. I think anytime you get a, you know, an 8 seed, even though you know, you look at this and you go, it's hockey, so anything can happen. I think anytime you get that, it's a problem, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you have to win this, don't you? Yeah, don't you just have to win this?
Do you have Dallas as an advantage over either team if they win, or is it, like, who do you see bearing the matchups coming out of that round?
Yeah, I don't like Dallas, and I think that Dallas has their problems. I do. But when you look at the next round, you know what I'm saying? It is that tough situation. Look, everything depends. If St. Louis moves on, they're done. Okay, they're just done. Sorry. So Dallas will have, you know, a free pass. But it depends on what Hellebuck does. Right. I like this Winnipeg team a lot. I've liked them for a couple of years. I love their defense. I like what they do. They limit opportunities. I think Dallas is very susceptible. I believe that the winner that's going to the Stanley Cup is coming from either Las Vegas or Edmonton, because I'm not a believer in St. Louis, not a believer in Dallas, and I need to have a lot of convincing to believe in Hellebuck.
If Connor shows up tomorrow, Tom, obviously they're the favorite in round two. If he doesn't show up, they're out. And then you have St. Louis, Dallas, which I like Dallas. So I'm going to go that direction. Give me Dallas over St. Louis, Winnipeg over Dallas. I think you probably feel the same way, right? But by saying that, if Bennington throws another gem tomorrow, how many times do we ride that hot goalie? That's something to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's something to look at. I just can't believe that St. Louis is going to continue to advance. Right. Yeah, I just don't. I don't know. Maybe it's because, and it is, maybe it's because I just don't buy into the fact that only a goalie, we know the hot goalie, but only a goalie. I don't think St. Louis has anything else that I feel comfortable about. I don't think St. Louis has any advantage in any facet of the game except for if Bennington is hot against any team that's left in the playoff field. Do they have an advantage in any area outside of that? No, I don't think so.
Let's not forget the guy in Dallas that did that to us a few years ago, right, Tom? Jake the Snake? Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do this. I know we need to take the final break, but I want to kind of give you a preview of tomorrow night's show. Yes, we're going to talk some baseball on the way back from this time out. We're going to talk some baseball tomorrow night, too. But, Tom, how about this? And everybody listening in the Heatwave Sports family, tomorrow night, We got such a great response on the top 10 list that we do. The last one we did was the top 10 college basketball coaches in our time. And when I say in our time, you had to have doesn't count if you're a baby and you don't understand what's going on, right, Tom? So from the time you were able to understand what was going on till present, who were the top 10 college basketball coaches? And we got such a great response from our list. So let's do it again tomorrow. And since we're talking NHL, how about we do two? Let's do top 10 goalies of all time to play in our era, and then just top 10 players in the NHL history that have played in our time. I think that's going to open it up for some debates, and I think some of the lists will be skewed because we're going into a much wider range now when we're talking about NHL.
Yeah, I think that people often also gravitate to, you know, their generation when it comes to goalies, because it is so, you know, emotional that, oh man, look at the goalie just went absolutely crazy. You know, look at what he just did. I think that people are going to get real angry, you know, because of what we're talking about when we're talking about different generations. I mean, I'm off the top of my head, and I didn't do this for real, but right off the top of my head, my number one and two to me are absolutely ridiculously clear. Yeah. And I think that I'm going to get a lot of pushback from Las Vegas. And I also believe that the guy that most people in Vegas are going to have in their one or two might not make my top five.
I can already tell you he's not in my top 10. How about that?
Oh,
am I, okay.
at Heatwave Sports, not at Tom Barton Sports.
Come come on, I can't. I got to be the heel in this. I got to write it out, right? I can't turn face ever against the Golden Knights, can I? I have to heel this out.
I'm going over my list. I'm going, okay, he's definitely not one. He's definitely not two. Yep, nope. In my mind, nope. Not going to be three. Is he going to be four? Oh, I don't know if he's going to be four. Yeah, he's falling, but I don't think he gets out of my top ten.
Yeah, I'm being funny, but at the same time, in the back of my mind, I'm like, am I though? Because when I start to put the list together, I have my top guys, right, Tom? You have your top guys. We don't even have to research it. We know who they are. Same with, and when I'm sorry, I should have said, right, Tom, goalies and then skaters. We're going to have two separate lists. So that way, because look, a goalie could transfer itself into top NHL players of all time, but I want to go skaters and goalies. And we both know our top guys on both those lists respectively. It's the fun's going to be like 3 through 10, right? That's where it really gets fun.
You think? I bet you we're going to get some pushback on 1 and 2.
Okay.
One I don't think is arguable. I'm telling you now. I don't think you could argue 1, and to me you can't argue 2. But I think people are going to argue 1. I don't think you can, but people will.
Be a fun show tomorrow night. I'll set that up over on the Twitter at HW Sports, at Tom Barton Sports. So make sure you tune in tomorrow night on the Super Sunday Night Edition as we do that. We're going to take the final timeout, talk a little Diamond on the way back to close it out on a Saturday night. It's Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Going to wrap it up here on a Saturday night, E-Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, over on Twitter, X at Tom Barton Sports, at HW Sports as well. And just quick reminder, loaded show tomorrow night for the Super Sunday night. We're going to do two top 10 lists. So C-Win, Matty V, Armando, Brian Feldman, anybody listening, part of the Heatwave Sports family, wants to join in. Top 10 skaters that you personally have watched play in your lifetime. And I hate having to preface it, right, Tom? You had to watch them play majority of their career. You can't jump on with somebody just because they were playing when you were born. That doesn't count. Top 10 goalies of all time, NHL. So no, Chris, your Russian goalie does not make the list. So that should be fun. We're looking forward to that.
So no, Tom, Ken Dryden?
I didn't see Ken Dryden. Did you, Tom?
No. I was like 2 years old, man. I think Chris Wynn saw him.
He might have. He might have. Ron did definitely saw him. Ronnie definitely saw him.
I think he retired in like 79 or 80. So yeah. I just missed him. 2 or 3 years, I just missed him.
You know, I heard the commercial before the break, TomBartonSports.com. You're a winner today, Tommy. You had the under in the Orioles Royal game. And actually, if Tom, you said it in your write-up, as a matter of fact, as well, very documented write-up, that if you were thinking about it and you put a little bit on the Orioles to lose, you would have been a double play winner because of their struggles with left-handed pitching this season.
Yeah, you know, I love to find these angles. And here's a free one for everybody out there from TomBartonSports.com. The Baltimore Orioles are atrocious against left-handed pitching this year. I mean, it is getting into that, like, historic sort of area when you're talking about Orioles versus lefties. The Baltimore Orioles this year against left-handed pitching, just to give you an idea, because it is eye-popping, so if anybody wants to make some money, they've scored now 25 runs, Tim, in 31 games. 25 runs in 31 games against lefties. They have 4 home runs against lefties all year. Just to give you an idea, they have 34 against righties. They're batting 172, but that's not even – just listen to how pathetic this is. Their on-base percentage is 256. 256, Tim. They don't even take walks. It's alarming how little they can do against left-handed. So every time a lefty's coming up, the Baltimore Orioles just go against them. At this point, it doesn't matter who it is. Chris Bubik was apparently Cy Young out there today. And that, there are certain teams in certain spots and certain situations. And TomBartonSports.com, I'll jump on all of those
and kind of give them to you and find them. This is a free one. The Orioles, it doesn't take a lot of research. They are pathetic against lefties.
Big fat zero today in that game against Kansas City. What is going on in Baltimore, Tom? 13-19. They we're a fifth of the way through the season now, so we'll say the 1/5 mark of the season. They're only 5.5 games out of the division, which you think with a 13-win team would be way, way more. But the problem for me is we coming into this season, the areas that needed to be addressed, they didn't address it. Right, that was obviously the starting pitching, and that's surely come full circle right now early, as they've given up 173 runs so far this year. What we weren't expecting, and when I say we, not only Oriole fans, but even very astute baseball guys like yourself, we didn't expect the offense to be this bad either, Tom. 123 runs scored. So a 50-run differential for them right now. Gunner was hurt to open the year. He hasn't really gotten going. The Santander's bat's up, a big hole in the lineup right now. It hasn't been replaced. What the heck is going on in Charm City?
Well, look, if I just explain to you the moves that they made in the offseason, Tim, with no context, you would go, all right, I get it. So here's this team that has a bunch of young guys on their team. They do not sign their cleanup hitter that hit almost 40 home runs. They do not sign their ace, who is their big number one guy. So they lose their number one batter. They lose their number one pitcher. Their number two hitter that actually, is the face of their franchise or becoming the face of their franchise is going to be injured to start the year. Their number two pitcher that is going to be the face of the franchise on the pitching side of things is also out for the first month of the season. I mean, you can argue they lost their four best players, but this is a front office management issue, Tim. You can't go out there, expect to compete with the likes of the New York Yankees who bring in, look, I know they lost Soto, but they bring in Max Fried, they bring in Bellinger, they brought in names, right? They brought in Goldschmidt. That's what they brought in Devin Williams. He doesn't look good, but the Yankees are making moves. The Boston Red Sox, who you're competing with, bring in Garrett Crochet, they will get their number one guy. This is the moves, and they bring in Bregman. Huge arm, huge bat. The Yankees bring in a huge arm, huge bat. The Orioles lose a huge arm and a huge bat. The fact that the Baltimore Orioles had the audacity to look at their fans and say, we're going to lose the ace of our staff and our number four hitter and be just fine in the AL East is insulting to the fans. It's just an insult to think they didn't need an ace and they didn't need their number four hitter who hit nearly 40 home runs last year. You can tell me all you want about Gunner being out and Rodriguez. Yeah, that hurts. And Adley has taken a downturn in his career. Yeah, that hurts. And Westberger's hurt. I'll give you all the excuses, Tim. But at the end of the day, how do you expect to compete with the elite teams that are making massive moves when you lose your ace of your staff and you lose a 40 home run here in the middle of your lineup? How do you look at your fans like that, Tim?
Yeah, you can't. I can't defend it. As much as I want to play the homer card in this situation, you can't. And you're right. It's. I don't know if, when the new owner took over, supposedly, influx of money, right? Right, Tom? We're going to go and do what we got to do. And you never really told, even though Corbin Burns said he preferred to stay on the West Coast for the rest of his career, if he would have just gave him the money, he would have stayed in Baltimore. It wasn't like he didn't enjoy his time there. But they didn't even bother.
But Tim, the two, just think about just the AL East. Forget about everybody else. The Red Sox got Garrett Crochet. He's their number one ace. The Yankees got Max Fried. Where was Baltimore?
They weren't even in the discussion.
Like the Yankees and Red Sox didn't lose anyone. They were just like, you know what? We want to go get extra. Where was the Orioles weren't even in this thing.
No.
So if they lost Burns, you correct it with one of these two guys.
Correct. And the fact that they didn't even try for Burns, you would thought there was something up their sleeve, right? We kept waiting, right, Tom? We kept waiting. Well, if they're not getting Corbin, they must have something bigger brewing. And it's just nothing. And what was the replacement? Charlie Morton? Ken Gibson? That's the replacement? I'm still
angry. I got to tell you.
I'm still angry, man.
But you also have to look at the Santander thing. Look, I know that they are loaded. And they are, right? This team is absolutely loaded in the farm system. What does that do for you, Tim? Being loaded in the farm system and you know, $15 gets you a beer at Yankee Stadium. Like, what is – it's not doing anything for you. They called up Kobe Mayo today, thank goodness, right? They have Westberg. They have the guys down there, Dylan Beavers. They have the young kid, the guy they just drafted, the really fast kid. I forget his name. That they have a ton of guys. Where are they – when, I should say, are they waiting to make a move? You're 13 and 19. Are they just waiting for Grayson Rodriguez to come back and say, okay, we're going to do that? When do they make this move that you were expecting all winter and didn't happen, that I was expecting to happen, you know, in the spring and it didn't happen? When are they making this move?
I don't think it's happening. They signed Ken Gibson. That was the move. He pitches tomorrow. His ERA is over 20, Tom. 22.49 ERA. And even the moves that they made, look at this one. I know you've kept an eye on it. They brought in Rodgers from Florida, right? Just destroyed last year. He's hurt right now. He hasn't even pitched this season. One of the guys they gave up, Kyle Stowers, having a 300 season there in Miami. It's just something is wrong in that, from the ownership to the GM spot, and it trickles down. And you're right. It's great to load the system, because eventually, what do you do with a loaded system? You promote the guys that are major league ready, and you use the rest to go out and get veterans, right? Isn't that the map? Isn't that what you do? Isn't that what Houston did? Isn't that what Kansas City does? Isn't that what the Yankees do? I don't get it. You know, when they changed management up top, and they brought in the Houston regime is what I want to call it, and that extends down to Brandon Hyde. You know, they were part of the blueprint for the Astros. It just hasn't worked out. And I'm telling you this, Tom, and I've already kind of previewed it between us. If they don't turn it around soon, Brandon Hyde's out of a job. Whether it's his fault or not, he's out of a job.
Here's the problem, Tim. You're getting into an area with the Orioles this season where they dig themselves such a big hole that you're sitting there in the middle of June and you're going, is it even worth trading now? Mm-hmm. Can we dig out? Right? Because Eric Fetty isn't getting you to the World Series. You know what I'm saying? Like, who's the big name that's out there? Sandy Alcantara, he hasn't looked good with Miami. He just has looked like garbage. Eric Fetty will be available. Sonny Gray, is that your answer? 33-year-old, 34-year-old Sonny Gray? I mean, the options are limited, and I think that the Orioles are going to look at this thing. There's six games out now, or five and a half games out now. Six games under 500 right now, Tim. You look at what the Orioles next month will bring, and then you look at what June will bring. And come the end of June, right around the end of June is when people start making moves, right? Come the end of June, if the Orioles are 10 games out, do they even make the move, or do they scrap the season?
Right. Got to get.
I mean, these are the
first,
questions they're going to have to answer.
Yeah, and they got to get there first. I think, look, the next three series, Twins, Angels, Nationals, they can make a little dent in that if they do what they're supposed to do. But you can't even trust it right now. It's just a bad situation to be in if you're an Orioles fan.
Well, you can right here, Tim. Here's the problem. We just mentioned you can forget about winning against Washington. They have Mitchell Parker, who's a lefty, and they got Mackenzie Gore.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We laugh, but they can't beat a lefty. They just can't. So you have the next nine games here, right? Well, actually, next 12 games. What do you need? What do you need out of the next 12? You got to win eight?
Eight and four. Yep.
Okay. Does that move you up the standings?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think so.
You get you past Tampa and Toronto, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying to get closer to the Yankees.
No, probably maybe a game. maybe a game or maybe two, and that's winning 75% of the games you have in that 12-game series, right? So
that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they're digging themselves into a hole where they could have a good week and still look up and be six games back.
Let's close with one more kind of disappointment to start the year, right, Tom? And they started the year worse than the Orioles did. That's the Atlanta Braves. And then they kind of put it together, right, Tommy? You just think like, okay, this is the Braves team putting it together. And now they're in the midst of a three-game losing streak again. What's going on in Atlanta?
Nothing's working in Atlanta, but I think they're going to be okay. And here's why. They get Spencer Strider back in the next 2 weeks. They get Ronald Acuna back. And I think that's the jolt to the team that they're going to need. I cannot stand. I hate Tim when general managers say, oh, we're getting the healthy guys back. And it's a Brian Cashman thing. We're getting the healthy guys back. That's like making a big trade. But in Atlanta's case, it really is. Right? I mean, in Atlanta's case, you can't go out there and make a better trade than to get Spencer Strider. You can't go out there and make a better trade than to go get Ronald Acuna. And I think when they do come back, it's going to fix a lot of problems.
I know you got a baseball game up for tomorrow over at the website, Tom. Tell everybody about Tom Barton Sports.
Yeah, guys, TomBartonSports.com coming off of another winning week, a level 4 win in hockey. TomBartonSports.com got a game or two up every single day for 30 days. You get it all for less than $200. It's TomBartonSports.com. No upgrades, no commission, no extra fees. Just winners at TomBartonSports.com.
All right, Tom, got to do some research now. We got them top 10 lists tomorrow night.
Oh, I love it. We're already causing havoc here. We're already getting text messages, and everyone's list is wrong but mine.
For Tommy Barton, thank you to everybody listening in. As always, Tim Ungles, we have a great Sports Sunday. We're back at it at 10 o'clock tomorrow night right here on Fox Sports Radio Las Vegas, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Good night.